So I'd like to call the meeting to order. This is the August session of the San Luis Obispo County Health Commission. And first of all, I'd like to introduce two new commissioners. We have Jean Raymond. We have Mary Jean Sage. So welcome to the group. We all received the minutes of the actually two previous meetings, and I wanted to see if there's any changes that anyone has found in these minutes. We did find one little typo, but I think we've got that covered.
Move approval.
Any second? Okay. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Okay. They will be approved. This time is now open for public comment. This is a time when persons desiring to speak on issues other than scheduled items that are on the agenda and are within the scope of interest of the Health Commission. If you'd like to speak, please come forward and state your name. Okay, seeing no public comment, let's get right into the our first agenda item, which is homeless health outreach programs and services. And first of all, we've got Patty Diefendurfer of HCA Homeless Health Program. Please come up.
Thank you very much for inviting me
here
this
evening.
I represent Community Health Centers of the Central Coast. My title is Special Populations Health Services Manager, which is a really long title. But basically, what I'm responsible for is to oversee the special population programs that CHC provides in the community, which are health care for the homeless program, public housing program, and the farm worker program. And tonight I'm here to talk about our health care for the homeless program. And it's really important because no matter how hard we try, and no matter how many meetings we have, homelessness is an issue that is here. And we know that there's not sufficient housing. If there were, we would have everyone housed. We are working toward that, and Trish is here tonight, and we have HSOC and the 10-year plan. But in the interim, there are services that are needed for this population. And so the homeless health care workers or case managers, they go into the shelters, into the city streets. They wander in the wooded areas, and they poke their noses under the bridges to seek out people who live in our midst, but are very often hidden in plain sight. And our outreach workers are the ones who build trust, who build hope, and work with the patients to overcome barriers and bring care to people experiencing chronic homelessness. And that's what our program is about. Homelessness, as you all know, it's a real-life drama about being caught among extreme poverty, lack of access to adequate resources and services, and the experience of illness and disability, feelings of estrangement from self and from the community that they live in. It's a drama with a cast of thousands, and it's a true American tragedy. I myself was homeless for 5 years, and lived in a car with a 14-year-old daughter, so I can tell you it's not much fun. Healthcare for the Homeless program's goal is to help these patients break the bonds that are imposed on them by their homelessness. At its best, it helps people move toward a life of greater health and personal ability and stability. And in doing so, we're hoping that the patients are able to discover more fully their own place and their own sense of belonging in the community, in the larger community. CHC is committed to serve the needs of the special populations patients. We provide medical services at the Prado Day Center. We have a mobile unit there that's open 3 days a week. And we also have a behavioral health office in Grover Beach where we provide case management, we provide a licensed clinical social worker, and we have a psychiatrist there 1 day a week. We see an average of 60 patients a week over a three-day period at Prado. And I can tell you that lately we've been seeing more Vietnam veterans there, and we've also been seeing men that are being released from CMC. And they come with a number of severe issues, serious issues. A lot of the patients that we see have chronic illnesses, such as diabetes, such as hypertension. And as Pearl will speak, and to the medically fragile, this is also something that we deal with in the medical profession with the homeless patients that are so sick they have to be admitted to the hospitals, and then where do they go when they're released if they can't care for themselves? This is a real issue. So there are a myriad of things that we need to address and we need to look at. And I think as a group, all of us that are here in this profession that deal with this population know what processes need to be in place. And we're working toward that. We are going to need the help of everyone to accomplish this. And in closing, I would just like to leave you with a quotation from John Fitzgerald Kennedy. There are costs and risks to a program of action, but they are far less than the long-range risks and costs of comfortable inaction. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Any questions from the commissioners for Ms. Diefendorfer? Next, we have Reginald Holmes, who's going to talk to us on behavioral health outreach and engagement.
Good evening, everyone. My name is Reginald Holmes. I'm a licensed psych tech, and I've been with mental health now about 11 years, and I've been in this job since the latter part of last year. I was just speaking to somebody earlier about when I worked in South County, how I would see this population all the time as I'm riding down the street in my car. But when I took over this job, I had no idea of the magnitude of the scope of the problem out there. I am one of those people, part of my job is getting out off the beaten path. You know, I do a lot of going on the bridges. I do a lot of getting out in the woods. And I mean, I'm just amazed every time I go out there. My office now is off at McMillan. If you come on to McMillan to Orchid, there's a field right across the street from us. We counted probably 30 people in that field just last week. So I just try to do the best job I can. They're all not mental health issues, but I feel like part of my job is to triage and to help these individuals to get the services they need, point them in the right direction. Say a kind word to them, make them smile, because at this point, they don't have a whole bunch to smile about. A lot of women and children out there, whole families. And I'm not sure what the answer is. As my boss said it one time, he says, you know, everybody's out there bleeding, but we just try to step over the ones that look like they're doing okay and get the ones that are bleeding more than the ones that we just stepped over. It's been difficult not taking this job home, because I remember back during the rainy season, you know, I've tried to build rapport with a lot of these people. And I spent a lot of time at Prado and all the feeding centers throughout the county, North County, South County, at the Shots of Grace Baptist Church. And on a lot of these people I've had on my caseload when I worked in South County. But the first time when it rained and I thought about these people, and God, I hope they're okay, it's been difficult, but I just do the best I can in 8 hours and get up the next day and go back out there and try to help the next individual. And that's pretty much all I have to say. If there's any questions?
Yes. Thanks for coming in, Reginald. I do have a question. You do the outreach. You contact these people, then say if they have a physical health problem. Are you working with CHC and you get them over to the, if they're not at Prado already, you get them to that van on the right day? Or
I try to direct people to where they need to go. A lot of times, even though it's not in the scope of my job, I transport these clients to different places, CHC. There was an individual here recently who was under a bridge on Los Osos Valley Road who had cancer, and wasn't making his chemo appointments. And he wasn't a mental health client, but he certainly needed the help. So I talked to my boss about it and took the liberty of making sure that he got his chemo appointments. I'm happy to say that he's housed right now with the help of Pearl, if she's in here. And and that's rewarding. That's, other than getting a paycheck, that's part of the payoff for me. And it's just nice to be able to help some individual like that who really needs it.
And then for the mental health services, does the county have an office? You know, you're out there doing outreach. Do you then get them in for an office visit with someone in the county system, or what's the result?
Normally, if they have a psych diagnosis, then I generally try my best to get them involved in mental health, get them a what we call an intake appointment, which is the beginning of getting into services. So, yes, I do that.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Yes.
I have a question regarding, and I don't know if you can answer this or not, but when we look at the overall picture of homeless, since you're out under the bridges and out in the fields, what percentage do you think are actually hooked into services? Are we looking at a lot of homeless people that aren't even getting anywhere close to services?
There are a number of them that are hooked up with services. If I had to guess, I would say there are a vast number that are not in services for whatever reason. There are people out there who are leery of the system. They realize that it comes with conditions, and maybe they have not had a good experience in the past. So there are a big number out there that are not in services, to answer your question.
Other questions? Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Next we have Pearl Munak from Transitional Food and Shelter. Thank you.
Yeah. Thanks for inviting me. Transitional Food and Shelter is one of the best kept secrets, and they were trying to change that. We provide temporary emergency shelter for homeless people who are what we call medically fragile. That means they're too sick or too injured or too disabled to be in a shelter overnight and out all day long. So we take them upon referral from a hospital or another agency, and we put them in one of our cheap studio apartments. And if they're all full, then we put them in a motel because it's an emergency. So we keep them until they either get well or get housed. If they're not going to get well and they're seriously ill, well, we keep them until they get housed. And we try to help them get housing, and some of the other agencies also are helping them to get housing. We have no paid staff at all. We have no office, and we work out of our homes. And our expense is rent. And that is what we do.
Hey, thank you. Any questions from the commissioners? Commissioner Warren.
Thank you, Pearl, for what you do. It's
absolutely
just an incredible service to this county and the citizens that are here. And I hope that the community out there will back you up and really help give you the resources that you need to continue what you're doing. It's really difficult to, it's something we've been pondering, is when someone has to leave the hospital and they're homeless, this is just a very scary proposition, and I myself would not want to face that. And I hope our community can come together and find some resolution. But
and,
I want to thank you. You've been doing this a long
time.
Patients
especially. Reggie found us one of those. He wasn't even a mental health patient, but he got him to us.
Yes, Commissioner Hans.
And your funding is totally from contributions, or have you been able to obtain grants?
We have grants, donations, and fundraising projects. And this is becoming extremely difficult this year because of the scarcity of grants.
And you have studio apartments that you rent and then and make them available for the clients that you end up?
There are 9 apartments.
9.
In different areas of the county.
And then you also provide meals? Did I read that in your brochure?
We do not. We have a meal program, which is not necessarily for either homeless or disabled people. But we put some initial food into the apartment, so if they're coming out of the hospital, they don't have any income, they've got something to eat. And then we help them get food stamps, and they have usually, you know, cooking facilities.
And how many people have you been able to help? I mean, this is great. How many people have you been able to help over the past year, say?
Probably 500 a year. And they stay a long time, so it's like, it's a lot of shelter nights. I'm thinking, 5,000?
Wow. I don't want to hog all the questions.
Any further questions for the commissioners? I have one quick question. How can someone who's watching this donate? How do they get a hold of your organization?
Bless their hearts. They can call me at 238-7056.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Next, we're going to be hear from Drew Washer on the medically fragile and homeless health issues. Thank you.
You know, I just, I work at French Hospital. I'm a medical social worker there. I've been there for over 20 years. And I got to say, without Pearl mm-hmm. and what she does, it would make my job incredibly more difficult. Because you can imagine, you take a homeless person who is diagnosed with a serious illness, maybe cancer, who has no ID, no access, no linkage to any kind of medical services, mean Medi-Cal, CMSP, and they can't get CMSP if they don't have ID. So if you're homeless and you don't have ID and you got a diagnosis like cancer and we have to treat it, then how do you link up services with that? So that's something we have to do at the hospital, meaning we have to maybe get them ID, have to find a way to get them Medi-Cal, find a way to get them housed, continue with the outpatient chemotherapy, and do that all together with a person who has no other resources. Know their family. So there's a lot of things that go into place to put these things together. And it's a growing thing. I mean, it's something, if we're dealing with issues of alcoholism, people who have cardiac disease, people who have infections, people who have fractures, all sorts of, related diagnoses, come to the hospital without any other, kind of access to health care. The hospital is a place of last resort that has to take care of them. I mean, where do you go if you need help and no one else can help you? It's the hospital. It's the emergency rooms, those kind of places. So that's what the hospitals have to do. And without linkages like what, Pearl does, what Reggie does, it will make our job, quite more of a burden. And will burden the hospitals. We don't have a place to really kind of get them into next level of care. Because oftentimes the problem for hospitals is we don't have a safe discharge plan. We can't just discharge people back to the street if they're going through chemotherapy. We don't want to do that. We want to take care of them. Or if they're too decompensated as far as with their health care or with their mental health care or the combination of the two, we can't send them home because there is no home. There's no place for them to go. So again, these burdens the health care system quite a bit. So we need the services to pass it on to for other services to kind of help out. So it's an ongoing trend. This is not something that's going away. We're seeing, I could tell you more stories about, people who are working who don't have health insurance and what it does to them. But we're here talking about the homeless. And again, it's quite a burden on the homeless to try to be able to deal with a chronic health condition. It's enough to be homeless. It adds another level to be homeless and then having to deal with, bypass surgery, to deal with chemotherapy, to deal with a broken hip, And again, we're not talking, they don't have linkages to services, most of them. It's a big deal. And again, without services, and oftentimes the services that Pearl does, there's often not a case manager to kind of help fill the gaps. You know, we're talking about how to get them food, how to get them to the doctor, how to get home health out there, how to manage an IV, all those kind of things we have to kind of, pull together with patches of different services. So I don't know what else to tell you. It's not easy.
Questions of the commissioners? Mr. Warren.
Yes, in particular with people that are in there and you get them detoxed,
mm-hmm.
then to let them back out into the street along with whatever issues they have, they're so likely to relapse.
Right.
Do you see that as a big need in this county also?
Absolutely.
To have some kind of other services?
Well, realize too, they don't come in just a detox. They come in because they have liver failure, because they have pancreatitis, because they have gastric varices. They have all sorts of medical complications that make it that we have to bring them in for a medical procedure and a detox. So yes, we're doing complicated procedures on people, and then of course we discharge them back to the community. We're trying to work out services maybe with sober living houses, talking to them about a place where we can almost have a scholarship for patients like this, for our detox patients, where they could go to. And they wouldn't have to go right back to the street, to the environment where it's so desperate that why wouldn't you go back and, just take a drink to kind of numb the pain. I mean, if you have people who have liver failure, guess what numbs the pain? It's drinking. And what happens is they come back to the hospital for more issues with bleeding, and we go through the same thing again. Very expensive services. Very expensive services.
That was my next question. It seems like sober living or some kind of a treatment program would be much less expensive than the hospital or them winding up in jail.
We've had people going through detox and other issues with alcohol-related problems, been in the hospital for 2 months. We've had another guy who had a detox who jumped through a window at the hospital. We've had people who have had multiple, hospitalizations for detox and other related medical problems due to alcoholism. Been weeks in the ICU. Thousands and thousands. I mean, it costs over, a couple thousand dollars a day to stay in the ICU? But, you guys add it up. To do a banding procedure for gastric varices? Tens of thousands of dollars. So, I mean, many of the doctors aren't going to get reimbursed for this, but the hospital's putting out lots of money. Doctors are putting out lots of time and effort. But, yeah.
Where's the schism here in that we have a treatment facility for men here in our county, a state-licensed facility, and they're about to go under? And I don't want to see us lose them. It's taken so long to get it here.
I know.
I'm hoping we can find a way to, like you say, scholarships and beds or something so that we get those people from the hospital into an actual treatment program.
That would be great. And I can't say I've made a lot of referrals to the project, the program you're talking about, because of it's far as the cost of even for a low cost. It's a very low cost program for someone who is homeless to get to that kind of program. It's very difficult. Sober living houses, which are more on the hundreds of dollars a week basis or $125 a week or something, are more doable with doing outpatient services with the county and with AA. But still, again, those are even beyond the reach of the clients the patients we're talking about. So it's really something we have to pay attention to. It's something that it takes a lot of medical cost and a lot of effort and a lot of time for people to deal with these cases. And when it could be totally preventable, like you're thinking. So, give it your time and energy, because it's what it needs.
I just have one more. Do you have any thoughts about how we might bring the community together with this to work on this particular issue?
Well, I know at the hospital we'd like to partner with the sober living houses in the area. I know the services that Pearl does are outstanding. We can't lose something like this, and we have to build on it and make it grow. What Pearl does, again, is a life, you know, line to people who are, you know, out in a sea of just, you know, of just, you know, seeing their life go away. So you have to support these services to really give people a chance. Because when we do get them linked up with housing, because that's usually the key, they're able to then eventually get to their SSI, which is a big deal to get their income coming. And we can see them get stabilized. So we do. There are some, you know, success stories out there where it makes a difference. So yeah, absolutely, we need to kind of link in with Pearl Services, sober living houses, provide some scholarships, provide some kind of resources. You know, I think I want to talk to our hospital about doing that. I think Sierra Vista could, you know, is very interested too. This, Rod, the social worker there, has been a very strong supporter of the services. So I think we all work together. Whatever county services could be put to bear would be wonderful. I know that, and the county drug and alcohol program has talked quite a bit about kind of helping out. So, yeah, I keep the momentum.
Commissioner Hintz?
Oh, I just was wondering, can you tell me approximately how many people are in this situation over the period of a year? I mean, I know that a number of these people are back. When I worked at General Hospital, this was a population that we dealt with, and I was actually trying to figure out if it had increased.
You know,
since that time.
But I didn't come prepared with numbers, and Rod has done a much better job at Sierra Vista. You know, I've been at French for over 20 years, and I can tell you I've seen an increase, you know, as far as patient days, as well as the number of patients coming in. I would say we have probably at least once a week a patient who is medically homeless and fragile. So, and they all need to go to Pearl's program, but we definitely have a need to coordinate with outpatient services, with the Prado Center, with case management. So there's definitely an everyday, you know, there's, you know, I'm sure if you looked at the ER, you would, if you talked to the ER nurses or the director of ER, you would have another layer of certain stories to hear, because the ERs are inundated. You know, if you want to hear what they're going through, I'm sure they could tell you lots of different things with, you know, what they're popular, what they've seen is increase in services.
You keep saying need to make these connections. Is there something stopping these connections from being made, or sounds like you're familiar with services that are out there?
I think we're doing it. We all have regular meetings that we go to, so we know who's involved. It's just oftentimes having all the players being able to work with the clients, the patients, who are often, you know, once they're in the back of the community, are hard to find. You know, they don't have an address. So like the gentleman that Reggie was talking about and Pearl was talking about that we have in the now at the local apartment. He was living out in the creek, and we had to find him. We have to go to a gas station to leave a message with the attendant to then find this. When the person comes in for whatever, could you let them know we're looking for him? So oftentimes it's that kind of coordination of services that get messed up. Yeah.
Very time-consuming, I imagine.
Yeah.
Commissioner Arnold? Yes. Thank you for enlightening us here. My question, I've been reading that some people are homeless because they could no longer pay for the medical care that they needed, plus their rent. So that's what put them on the street, was a health problem. Do you have any idea how many of the people you deal with were originally made homeless because of their health problem?
No, I don't have the numbers. I really don't keep track of that part of it. You know, my job as a social worker at the hospital is to really just respond to those needs. I have seen, though, anecdotally speaking, that much more as far as, you know, people coming in, and it could be people in their 60s who are trying to get that next step onto Medicare who don't have access to health insurance, and they're the ones who are facing the dilemma of, you know, coming in for, you know, an angioplasty, and there goes their 401k. So, you know, yeah, there's all sorts of stories that I could tell you about those kind of situations. Do they end up being homeless, per se? You know, there's all sorts of scenarios that, you know, that eventually can wear someone down from as far as health care costs, but yeah, it's definitely out there.
Any other questions for the commissioners? Well, thank you very much, and thank all of you for coming in to talk to us about this very serious matter, and we all want to thank you for your dedication and compassion for these members of our community that are often lost, so we very much appreciate it. Thank
you
very
much. Anything you can do to speak on their behalf to, you know, powers that be would be well appreciated, because the more we all work together, I think, the better we'll see our community benefit.
Commissioner Warren.
I wonder if we might have another member of the audience speak a little bit to the Homeless Services Council and what they're doing. Just a general overview for the public, since we've brought this up. Or Sandra, whoever would like to.
Put you on the spot, huh?
Well, just to let the community know.
Okay, what do you want me to
going
talk
on?
Could you state your name, please?
Sure, I can get to that.
Okay.
I'm Patricia Gomez, and I am the executive director designate of the Homeless Services Oversight Council, which is the community coalition, the community board that has been formed to address and implement the county's, the region's 10-year plan to end homelessness, which again was a strategy developed by a community coalition. I think Sue was involved in that that leadership team. If you step back and think about it, it's a business plan. It's a 10-year business plan on how do we move from managing homelessness to ending homelessness. How do we as a community and all the service providers, all these people that you've heard from and many more, and the housing community start talking together on ending homelessness and preventing homelessness. And those are the real keys. It's how do we prevent it before it gets to that point. And once people are homeless, how do we address the various barriers to move them into homes? And how do we get those housing units built? And it's a strategic business plan. And where we are now is just getting started to implement it. And there's been some good conversations with, again, a lot of the people that you've heard from today, all of the people. And also there's, you know, the people who are working on the housing aspect of it. And really getting a look at where are we investing our funds right now in homeless services, and how do we invest them strategically in the future. And that plan is a guideline on how to do that. As somebody has characterized projects like this, it's like you're having to rebuild the airplane as you're flying it. And that's kind of what the community is doing now as we look at homelessness. Thank you, sir.
Thank you very much. And thank all of you. Once again, we thank you and the community thanks you for all that you do and your compassion. Next we have... Now, is there anyone in the audience, anyone who wants to, any public comment on these in this area? Okay. Oh, I'm sorry. Okay. Sorry, it wasn't on the list.
Okay.
Excuse me.
Bundle. Things that
certainly have mandated starting various departments.
Work.
Treat. Of agreement. I will just
difference some. California. Public health. Cough. That there. Students return.
Very nice.
We've had majority. Recommending that federal about needs to the hospital.
Is it? One.
So it's important.
From the experience.
Out of Force. Domestic. In this. And then work together.
Met. Hope so. Asked. Green. Would you like?